How are you? Welcome to the Entrepreneur Experiment Podcast with me, Gary Fox. This is a special episode. This is with Mr. Pat Dively. This is all about the brain and the mind. We talk about ego, self-awareness, and the power of the shadow. Here's my chat with Pat.
Pat, welcome to the pod.
Good to be here.
Correction. Welcome back to the pod.
Yeah, when was the last one? It's a couple of years, yeah?
I had to check, right? September 2020.
Wow.
In the peak of that thing that was going on in 2020.
God, I was probably depressed.
Probably, we're all depressed. Like, the only thing is, like, get great people like you in the pod, because everyone's at home. I'd ping everybody. I was like, hey, do you want to go podcast? And everyone's just stuck at home. So they're like, yeah, sure, randomer.
I don't think I'd recognize myself back then. I must listen back to it. I meant to listen to it and I didn't listen back.
I think we all have a bit of trauma from that. I think we all have this thing. Let's just not talk about it. Let's just not think about it. Let's just not deal with it. We've just had this massive 2-year life-altering event and we're all now carrying on. And slight tangent, I think this is why we're dealing with this banquet of consequences we have now in the world, because we all just kind of went, anyway, moving on.
Yeah.
Let's just treat everything the exact same as it always was. And now the world is on fire.
Yeah.
There's a random start for you, Pat. Take that and go wherever you want.
It's great.
And as I said to you when you were joking coming up on the train this morning, welcome to 3D Pat. Like, I just saw like 2D Zoom Pat the last time. So it's great to actually see you in person. You are an adventurer. I was trying to write like a rapid LinkedIn post this morning. My battery in the laptop was dying. So I was like trying to write a really quick LinkedIn post. I was trying to describe you. And afterwards I was like, that's the wrong word. Curious adventurer is how I describe you. How do you describe yourself?
It depends on the context, but I like curious adventure. I think that works both externally and internally. I definitely am someone that tries to explore my own internal world. And I think the way you do that is by putting yourself in different environments. So that's been an abundance of different things, from climbing big mountains all over the world to doing massage trainings, to doing breathwork trainings, to studying shadow work, to I'm going free diving for a couple of weeks in Egypt in a few weeks' time. But yeah, I'm an adventurer. I want to know who I am beyond who I think I am.
I like that.
It's there is that quote, isn't there, that, you know, don't live the same life or the same year 75 times and call it a life or something like that. So
yeah, some people die. Was it some people die at 25 and they're buried at 85?
Yeah.
On that theme. And that's why, as I've gone through the pod, it's been my own journey, right? The pod is just essentially my own self-indulgent adventure into the world to try to figure out exactly who I am. I think you've put it beautifully there. And that's why I started to work on, you know, in the order of the brain, the body, and the business, because I think there's so much more to the world of business. There should be anyway, I think. I think this old idea of like, oh, I built a great business since you dropped out at 55. What's the point? What is the point? And I speak, and a lot of it is kind of like anti-learning. So I'm listening and talking to people and I'm like, oh, that's not what I want at all. Oh, I'm married to a man. I'll hustle 16 hours a day, da, 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 da. And I always think to myself, to what end? To what end? So we spoke last time and people can go back to episode 17 and catch up on your kind of like business adventures. You started off as in the fitness world. And you've now kind of morphed more into kind of like more of a holistic view on life. Is that correct?
Yeah. I was 21, 22 when I came into fitness. And I often tell people, like, back then, back in my day, the fitness industry wasn't really a thing in Ireland. There was Carl Henry and there was Paul Byrne. Paul Byrne used to train Boyzone and all the celebrities back in the day. And Carl Henry was well known from, I don't know if Operation Transformation was even a thing, but fitness was my passion. That was my thing that I loved since I was a kid. And so I did the fitness thing and I was naive at 21, 22. I thought push-ups and broccoli and you get people to do those two things and suddenly you're going to be, you know, a well-known trainer. And excuse me, I obviously brought in the internet stuff early on. I kind of had a knack. I actually have a website up there from when I was 13, imagine, a wrestling website, WWF Dively, on my dad's Aircom account. So I kind of had a knack for the internet, and so I used the internet and, you know, built this fitness business online. And obviously a lot of my generation had gone to Australia and Canada and different places. So the long and the short was I went from 5 clients to 20,000 clients in 4 years, 2012 to 2016. And push-ups and broccoli wasn't cutting it. So I started seeing that there's more going on here. Like, everyone's getting the same plan, but most people to be blunt, most people are probably not getting the results that I'd love for them to get. So what else is happening? There was self-talk, there was sleep, there was stress. Self-talk was the first thing that really interested me. Like, how are people speaking to themselves? What's the story people are telling themselves, and how's that driving their behavior? So for a couple of years, I got really into that, like CBT, coaching, how our thoughts drive our feelings, and our feelings drive our actions, and our actions drive our results. And then I kind of ran out of road, I guess, with that way of living. This idea that there's a top-down approach to healing and there's a bottom-up approach. So top-down is the mind impacting the body. So change your thoughts, change how you feel. That works up to a certain point. But sometimes in life, you can find that cognitively everything makes sense. So for me, it was 28. I had achieved everything I set out to achieve. I did everything I thought would help me overcome my insecurities. So top-down approach was, there's nothing here to fix. There's nothing here to change. But bottom up is what's happening in my body will impact how I see the world and how I see myself and how I feel. So I need to address that.
Do you mean the physical feelings, or do you mean like your soul, or what do you mean when you say the body?
Physical feelings. We can think about the body as being the subconscious to some degree. Like, you've got your conscious awareness of what's happening here. You've got your conscious awareness of what you want in life. So consciously, I might say I want to lose weight and I want to get in shape. And then I find myself reaching for a glass of wine, which is not what I wanted to do. So that's my subconscious playing out. And it's happening through the body. So I get an emotional trigger. Something happens that's triggering and uncomfortable for me. And my method of finding safety is to reach for something that's helped me feel safe in the past. So I became more curious about this and sort of the impact of stress, I suppose, where my 20s were driven by insecurity. Like, I'm not enough. I'm nobody. I want to be somebody. And so that really drove me to be successful. And I was relentless. You know, I did hundreds of talks around the country for free just to get my name out there. I taught thousands of classes in fitness. I wrote articles. I did so much over those couple of years. And I burnt myself out effectively because I was constantly in this hypervigilant state, that state of kind of being switched on and I couldn't switch off.
Over the past 5 years in this podcast, I've spoken to loads of amazing Irish business who grew from one idea to become world-class companies able to compete with the very best on the international stage. And many of those started up and grew with the help of their local enterprise office. From starting or growing to becoming more sustainable or digitization, the local enterprise offices have everything to help make it happen for your business. And if there's one thing that entrepreneurs want, aside from more money, it's more time. The local enterprise offices want to give that back. Their supports for competitiveness and productivity can help your business save time, money, and energy. For them, it's all in a day's work. So if you want to give your business the gift of time, decreased costs, and lower electricity bills, then go to allinadayswork.ie. Take 2 minutes to fill out the form and let your local enterprise office handle the rest. You've heard me speak about Mentors Work before, the award-winning free mentoring program for Irish businesses. Well, they have an exciting online event, the E-Commerce Mastery Summit, on Tuesday, June 25th, in partnership with Visa. It's a free event from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m., perfect for business owners, e-commerce pros, and marketing managers. Headlined by Amy Connolly, founder of Sculpt by Amy, who'll be sharing insights on how to boost your digital sales and expand your online reach. Register your place now at mentorsworklive.ie or click the link in the podcast description. If you've been listening for a while, you know Iconic Offices have been my partner for ages now. Working and recording out of their flexible workspaces has meant a huge deal to the success of this podcast. So it made perfect sense to partner up with them again for season 17, but to give you, my fellow entrepreneurs, a unique offer. Come work in the Iconic Office workspaces for free with no catches. Simply visit the link in the description below and enter Gary24 for a free day pass or a free day office pass. Enjoy.
Because I'm curious to explore this, because I think a lot of people go through their entire lives without realizing this. And I speak to a lot of founders, go through this, sell their company, and then there's this empty void where they thought there would be the nirvana of, now I'm enough because I've got the money. And in truth, in the last kind of 2 years, I've talked to so many people who've sold companies or had like liquidity events, as they're commonly called, which is a really nice way of putting it. And they feel nothing, or depression. What were you searching for? What did you think you'd kind of, what was the end goal you were searching for back then?
Funny, I am going to a retreat in 2 or 3 weeks' time, and we had a pre-interview. It's a real deep kind of psychotherapy retreat, and so they want to get to know who you are before you even show up. And they said, what do you long for in life? And the first word that came to me was peace. I think if I go back then, it was probably peace on some level that I was looking for. There was a relentless inner critic there for me. Mm. You know, there was constant judgment on myself. There was a sense of never doing enough, never being enough, never. So I was searching for, to be honest, my 20s, I was searching for validation. I was searching for someone else to tell me I was enough. And I guess when enough people do that and you still don't feel it, then you start questioning, okay, well, maybe it's not an outer game. But that prompted the next evolution, I guess, was I got to a point where I've achieved everything I thought I wanted. Everything looks good on paper. I'm judging myself for feeling anxious and sad because I should be happy. I should be grateful, all this kind of thing. And I started going to, you know, different therapists and psychologists and psychiatrists and all the ists. And one of them told me, you're burnt out. I always share this analogy. I might have shared it even on our last episode where she said, you have a fire alarm in your house to keep you safe, where if there's danger, the fire alarm goes off and it gives you the signal to get away. It gives you the energy to fight or flight. And she said, if the fire alarm goes when you use your toaster or the oven, it's malfunctioning. It's a pain in the ass. You might pull it off the wall, pull out the batteries. And she said, we have an internal alarm within us to keep us safe, where when there's danger, the alarm goes off. We have a fight or flight response and we can get to safety. And she said to me, your fire alarm is broken. So every little issue that shows up in your life is triggering this fear response. And that was my situation. You know, I'd see negative comments about myself online and I'd feel this fight or flight energy. I'd have a poor night's sleep, fight or flight energy. I'd caffeinate myself to the gills, fight or flight energy. So I was living in this like
hyper-state. That's a really interesting analogy.
So good. So good. I think that changed my life to some degree, that understanding that you can't live in your head. Well, you can live in your head. You can do what you want to do. But personally, I can't live in my head anymore because my head lies to me. If I drink 10 cups of coffee, my thoughts are going to be very different to if I've just done a 10-minute meditation.
Yeah.
So telling someone to think positive, which is what I did in my 20s. You know, I was naive. First, I thought it was fitness and it was nutrition. Then I thought it was just talk nice to yourself. Just be positive. Just, you know, set goals. And that's useful. All that stuff is useful. But it's useful until it's not. So I think it went from physical body to then recognizing the role the mental side was playing, which is how we speak to ourselves, then the emotional side. So what's happening in my body and how is that informing how I feel? And I think a lot of us are disconnected from our feelings. So that's been my curiosity the last couple of years.
It's a brave move, though, to walk away from, I'm going to do air quotes here. If you're not watching on YouTube, I'm doing air quotes for success.
Yeah.
You know, externally, I often think it'd probably be terrible and great to like see other people as they see you for a couple of days because we live in our head all the time. And we're our harshest critic.
Yeah.
Most of us, some people are narcissists, but that's a different story. Like we're a harsh critic. We always think we're not doing enough. We're not busy enough. We're not, especially social media, that exacerbates it so much. Because you're just seeing the highlight reel of everyone else's life. But I think for you to walk away from that is a very difficult challenge. What are we walking towards? Like, I know you were seeking the next level, but to kind of leave something, to let go of one branch without having the next one in view is difficult.
Yeah.
What was your plan? I don't want to make it sound so blunt, but what were you letting go to grab onto?
I didn't know. I had no idea. Because when I came into fitness, everyone around me told me there's no industry in fitness, so you're crazy to try and do this. And then when I left fitness, everyone said to me, there's no industry in personal development in Ireland, so you're crazy to do this. And I stepped into the unknown, I think. And a couple of years later, people would say to me, oh, you made that smooth transition from like fitness into personal development and workshops and stuff. I was like, that did not feel smooth.
It never is. It's smooth when people look at your Instagram or your LinkedIn, but it's never smooth.
But not to get too woo-woo or too spiritual, but like, I suppose my life philosophy that gives me comfort is that we're all here to have an experience and to learn lessons. And you can either spend your whole life repeating the same experience and not taking the lesson, or you can take the lesson and you can move on. And so I think the fitness phase of my life and that business had certain lessons for me that I needed to take on board. And I refused the lessons a couple of times. And then eventually I got it, I guess, and then stepped into the next thing. So for good or for bad, that's why I was laughing when, you know, I'm asked to come on a podcast about entrepreneurs. I don't know if I see myself as an entrepreneur, because from a business standpoint, I'll just walk away from the thing once I'm not into it anymore. I could have probably leveraged the gym or the fitness side of things, but if my passion is not there, my energy is not there, I see myself as a lifestyle entrepreneur. I want a business that supports the lifestyle that I want and where I can kind of show up how I am in the given moment. So I didn't know what I was stepping into. I suppose I was stepping into the adventure. Joseph Campbell wrote a book called The Hero with a Thousand Faces, and he talks about the hero's journey. Are you familiar with the hero's journey?
I love the hero's
journey. So good.
I love it. I reference it all the time. It's because you see it everywhere. Once you learn about it, you see it everywhere.
Yeah. And I think my hero's journey initially was failing with the business, moving back in with my parents, feeling completely lost, starting again, stepping into all my insecurities and putting myself out there. I was a shy guy. I am a shy guy. And to put myself out there on social media was terrifying. To do public speaking engagements was terrifying. To do the Late Late Show was terrifying. So I went through all those fears and all those insecurities. And then I emerged, and in some ways my whole world had changed, and in other ways nothing had changed. And then it was time for a new journey. So that's how it goes, I think.
It's weird. I'm incredibly shy. I love chatting to people like you one-to-one, but like large groups, I struggle with it so much. And then I kind of look at my life and I'm going, why do you keep doing that to yourself? Why do you keep putting yourself in all these situations of high stress is stretching it, but like situations where like you're hosting for like 400 people, I'm like, that's mental. It doesn't even feel like myself when I'm doing it. Yeah. I'm up there doing it. I can see my hands moving. I know my mouth is making words, but it's just, I just find it so strange. So
do you have, because I'm similar. One to one, I enjoy.
I love it.
1,000 people in a room, I actually enjoy to some degree. I'm nervous before, but when I speak in front of a group, it's fine. A cocktail party with a handful of people, that's terrifying to me.
10,
I don't
10 is
that.
Probably my nightmare. Weddings, that's my nightmare. And that tedding, that 10 people around the table, I hate that. That's just small talk is my Achilles heel. Mm. It's so ironic. But I was kind of thinking to myself last week, I was like, this is mad. You keep putting yourself in all these situations, but I think it's to grow. Mm. I think subconsciously it's to grow and keep pushing myself to, like what you do, just to round myself out, to kind of go, right, where are the growth possibilities? And are you living? You're really pushing into. What I find remarkable about you is that you've entered these different phases and had, again, success in every single one. Maybe to you, you'll judge it differently, but like, how have you been able to do that so well? Because when people go into an area that they're not enjoying wholesomely, they struggle to put themselves out there. They struggle to write best-selling books. How have you been able to do that? Because you've a track record, a really incredible track record now of success in different spheres.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
It's nice to hear that.
It's true.
Two things come to mind. One is, I talk about this philosophy that I have that we're all here to learn lessons. And so life gives you stuff. Life gives us experiences. Sometimes they feel nice, sometimes they don't feel nice. But everything life gives me, I see as like, okay, this is something for me to work with. So if I get hate online, that's an opportunity for me to work on my own self-esteem. If I get a breakup, that's an opportunity for me, you know, whatever it might be. But one of my other core philosophies, which I think serves me well, is that I can get good at anything that I practice. I can do anything that anyone else can do. It sounds kind of fundamental, but I think I've always had that. You know, I don't think I'm particularly talented. I don't think I'm particularly charismatic or anything like that. But anything someone else can do, if I invest energy and time into it, I can do. I know that. So I used to say, oh, I'm not good at dancing, or I'm not good at art, or I'm not good at this. And now I'm just like, no, I haven't practiced that thing. So I put a crazy amount of time into any of these things that I've pursued. Like crazy, you know, like hours upon hours upon hours of study daily for the last 15 years in all of these areas, from, you know, first fitness to nutrition to meditation to breath work to cognitive behavioral therapy to shadow work to logotherapy to coaching to body work to myofascial energetic release. I love it. And I suppose paired with that, Steve Jobs had some quote, didn't he, that was you have to be obsessed, or you have to love it, because it's going to take so much time that if you don't love it, you're just going to not live a pretty, that was paraphrasing, but you have to love it because of what it requires. I think that's the other thing I sometimes see is people come to me and they've got great careers and stuff, and they say, I want to be a coach now. And I'm like, oh, do you really? Like, I don't want to be a coach. I never wanted to be a coach, but there's a part of me, it's just, I think it's what I'm supposed to do. And so I've ended up doing that. So it's not, I don't feel like I chose the things that I'm pursuing. I feel like they chose me to some degree. I don't know if that makes sense.
That's interesting.
That's how it feels. It's I'm not doing it because it's a popular industry. I'm not doing it because fitness wasn't an industry when I started. Coaching was difficult. Well, I don't know even what I'm doing at the moment. I'm doing breath work and men's groups and resilience work and nervous system work. And I don't know that that's an industry, but I'm following my bliss, I suppose, to go back to Joseph Campbell.
And I want to talk about this because this is another area I think you're very good at, commercializing that then, because you're able to pursue your passions, but you have the awareness and the business acumen to commercialize what you're doing. Talk to me about that.
Yeah, I definitely have a marketing part of me. The way I always describe it to people, I was just before we met this morning, a friend was in touch, or a guy I'm connected with on LinkedIn, and he's a bit lost and stuff like that, and trying to figure out like where he's going next. And as simple as it might sound, my take on it is you figure out like who's your person that you want to help, what's the problem that they're struggling with, what's the solution, and then how do you offer the solution in a unique way. So that's always worked for me. Like, I go back to fitness days. I used to do an exercise where, you know, I was, again, 22 or 23 year old guy that had always loved training, that it gave me confidence. But my clients were not that person. My clients were middle-aged women who had a couple of kids, didn't have very much time, didn't love training. And so I really needed to step into their shoes. And I made up this imaginary character back then when I was 24 called Una. And Una was 44, and Una had two kids, and she did the school run, and she hated the gym, and she'd put on 2 stone, and she felt less attractive to her husband. And this was just an imaginary woman that I made up in my mind as to my clients. But what that allowed me to do was get very clear on what are the problems that Una struggles with, and what are her hopes and dreams and ambitions. And then on the flip side of the page, what are the solutions that I can offer that can support her? Mm-hmm. So if Una's got a problem with trying to cook meals for herself and then separate meals for the family, my solution is a family-friendly cookbook. If she's got a problem with not having friends, I'm providing an online supportive community. So I've always worked with that. And I suppose now with all the work that I do, I'm thinking, okay, who's my ideal client? And maybe it's corporate clients, staff are overwhelmed. What's the solution? Body and mind-based principles put across in an accessible way with resources. How do I offer that? So that's typically how I work. Problems and solutions. I mean, that's what business is in my mind.
I know it's so overcomplicated though. Everyone overcomplicates it so much. Yeah. As you just explained there, it's who can you help?
Yeah, I find it's an interesting space now in the sense that obviously niches within niches within niches, but you know, I definitely find it difficult to niche. That's been a challenge for me over the years, you know, really niching down, because there's lots of things I like to do and lots of things I want to do. It's funny, I was in Thailand there for a couple of months and I was training jiu-jitsu out there, and I went to Fitness Street. It's a famous street, mm-hmm. like 5 kilometers long. Just
gyms. A friend of mine was telling me about it recently. It sounds incredible.
It's nuts. But I was there, and this guy, this English guy, he's like the head strength and conditioning coach in one of the biggest gyms out there. So it's like a big deal, you know? And he goes, "Oh my God, Pat, I used to listen to your podcast. It's what inspired me to like come out to Thailand."
No,
and I was like,
way. "No way."
And I was a bit like, wow. He's very clear on what he's doing. He's a fitness guy. And I kind of envy that. Like, I envy just being a fitness.
I always envy people like that.
That know what they're
doing. I always look at them and go, "Ah, that must be great." But again, grass sells greener, right?
Yeah.
He looks at you and go,
the ego part of me that would like, you know, because I think there is a safety and a security that comes with knowing.
Know thyself, right?
Yeah. Knowing who you are is like a double-edged sword, right? Because the more you know who you are, the more kind of in a box you put yourself. But then not
do you
knowing
like what
who
you know?
Yeah. So I did have a bit of an existential crisis meeting him, where I was saying, I was a fitness guy 10 years ago. Now I'm a million different things, and that's fine. But commercially, it's difficult. But back to the commercial piece. Yeah, I just problems and solutions. That's kind of how I tend to operate. And
How do you balance that? Because again, this is a selfish personal question. I always find when I try to intro myself, I'm like, just pick a couple of things and tell them that. Because if you go off listing all the things that you do, people are like, "All right," and then you've lost them. Whereas people need a framework.
Yeah,
I always say this to startups. Whenever I teach like young entrepreneurs or whatever, I'm like, be very clear. Mm. We're going to do the one exercise. So we're going to describe it in one page. Then we're going to do one paragraph. Then we're going to do one line.
Oh, nice.
And that's how we're going. There you go, like that.
Yeah,
But that's just to boil it down. But ironically, I struggle with that myself because I love doing all different things. I love pursuing all these different passions. How do you balance that then? How do you kind of like, because you have a broad interest, so how do you even pick what to work on at any one time?
I'm trying to get better on this because I'm 36. I think I'm always going to have that curiosity, and I'm always going to follow what I want to follow, and I'm always going to lean into what feels most exciting or scary at the time. Equally, I feel like my 20s and my 30s up to this point have been about trying different things, and maybe I'm at a stage now where it's time to refine and to commit more to mastery in certain things. So saying no to more things, like breathwork is a big passion now over the last couple of years. So I'm really wanting to become a master at breathwork, because that's something that I'm training other teachers now, and it's something that ties a lot of what I've done together. It helps us access the unconscious. And so I pick things, you know, I'm working on a book at the moment about the shadow. So shadow and breathwork are my two big things at the moment. I see it almost like seasons. I just, or projects almost. Mm. I'm not so concerned with overarching, like who am I and what am I doing, but what's the project that's going to get all my awareness and attention for the next year? And those are the two things at the moment, my breathwork teacher training and my book. But yeah, I'm the same with regards to the 111, you know, like I had five ones, I think it was five ones, and it was like, pick one market, one place you're going to market to them. So like, okay, busy men, going to use LinkedIn. What's the one product that you're selling? Okay, 3-month mastermind for busy men. I can't even remember what it was. It must not be a very good structure, but I'm great at telling other people to niche down and stuff, but I haven't done that.
I know. I also thought first, like, don't try to be all things to all people, because then you'll never. I often think it's different for businesses though, because they have to be super clear. I always, when I found the work of Tim Ferriss, I was like, that guy.
Yeah.
That's who I want to be. I want to be like exploring all these things and distilling it down. And we were chatting off camera just about, you love experiencing these things, being able to distill it and then talk about it. Like, that's how I love having experiences and then going, okay, I've learned this. Now I can kind of teach, because to teach something is to truly know it, I think.
Yeah.
That seems to be your method. So you are constantly, whenever I see you, I follow you across all different socials. Whenever I see you, you're traveling, but you're engaging. You're doing courses. You're hands-on. Mm. Is that how you learn?
Yeah. I mean, I struggled academically when I was in school. I'm not really, I read a lot of books now and stuff like that, but I definitely, experiential learning works well for me. And it's a funny industry. Like I do cringe. I remember being on the Camino maybe 2 years ago, and spent a month walking across Spain, and I had a little bit of Spanish. So I'm talking to this girl and she was saying, you know, what do you do? And I says, oh, salud mental, I work in mental health, you know. She goes, oh, psychology, yeah. And I said, no, I'm a coach. And I just saw the energy come out of her sails. I said, oh, it's a universal thing. So I think the experiential learning piece is like, you know, I want to compete in jiu-jitsu all over the world, and I want to climb mountains, and I want to put myself in uncomfortable environments, and I want to, not for the sake of discomfort, but for the sake of learning who I am and making this stuff real. Anyone can regurgitate what they've read in a book.
Yeah. We're in a kind of an era of that as well.
Yeah.
We're in an era of like expert. I was listening to a podcast last week and I only screamed. Your mom was like, you know, so like, I studied for 12 hours and then I knew everything about it. I was like, oh Christ. that's the world we live in now. Like, people like read a book for 12 hours, then like do a Twitter thread or a LinkedIn thread about it. And you're like, that's not, That's just distillation and curation, which have a value, but like the depth of learning seems to be lessening.
Yeah, I think my experiential piece as well is, I talk about the body and the mind and the connection between the two, and like, you can live in your head, and you know, I've gone to trauma conferences where the people that are given the lectures are very intellectual and very kind of in the head, but maybe don't have the same understanding of like how to hold space for someone who's in trauma, because it's so heady. And, you know, to be connected to your body and to be connected and actually have gone through experiences puts you in a position where, you know, often with the breath work, I'll tell people, you can only bring people to the places you've gone yourself. So the fact that I've cried and grieved strongly, the fact that I've been absolutely terrified in certain scenarios, the fact that I've confronted fears, the fact that I've owned my anger, the fact that I've put myself in these scenarios where I've had to feel these feelings ultimately, allows me to hopefully transmit the things in a way that is not just cognitive kind of ideas, but actual experience. It's like the difference between information and transformation. We all have access to information, but it's like, where does transformation happen? When you bring it into your body and you actually, your nervous system is what's, you know, linking the body and mind. And when you actually, you read a book about how to talk to strangers and, oh, that's great. You know, it's my 5-step plan for talking to strangers, but you go and talk to 100 strangers, your system is going to feel how that is.
Yeah.
And ultimately I've been looking at stuff recently around the idea of tension, which I think is a nice way of thinking about it, that how much tension can we be with? An example I heard the other day was, if you are in a coffee shop and you drop a cup and it breaks, there's tension in that. And so your instant reaction is going to be to react and quickly get down and like,
sorry.
And apologize. Yeah. It's just like, can you just take a breath and just feel what's going on for you in that? Yeah. Oh, I feel shame and I feel scared. And the one other piece with the experiential learning is the way that I teach, and I see myself as a teacher primarily. That's what I want to be, at least in life. The way that I teach is through story. It's one thing to like, you know, here's how the nervous system works, but it's another thing to say, okay, this happened, and then this, and then this, and then I felt this, and then. I think story is the way that I like to teach. So you can't tell stories if you haven't lived.
100%. That's why this podcast is the way it is. It's a narrative based podcast about when I'm lining up people to come on, and you know, the email, I go, can you send me the list of questions? So it's like, it's just your story. Yeah. It's your story. It's not even your business's story. It's your personal story. It's your journey of, because I'm fascinated by the hero's journey. I'm fascinated by why people start. What are they working towards? And as I grow into this role of kind of uncovering people's stories, I'm now fascinated by what drives them to the end. What are they driving towards? As kind of the last 2 years have kind of emerged and my guest profile has changed, now fascinated by, like, what were you working towards? What did you think was going to happen at the end? That's kind of where I'm kind of looking towards now when people kind of build. And it's an incredible thing to be able to sit down and talk to people and learn from them. And I'm the same as you. I can only learn by doing. I love reading. I read probably 2-3 books a month, but the real learning comes from actually going out and doing something. I can read to enjoy something, or if I can read to learn, they're two very, very different things. I want to talk to you about your writing process, because you've been very prolific as to how you publish. How do you, I'm going to ask you a really obvious question. How do you write? No, and I don't mean like with a pen or with a, you know, with a journal. I mean, how do you, what is your writing process? How do you think about a book? How do you think about, like, oh, that should be a book? And then what does that process look like?
I break it down. I just break it down and I chunk it down. So the book, like, what is the purpose of this book? Who's it for? Who's it going to help? What's the solution it's solving?
Really quick break to thank today's sponsor. If you've been inspired by listening to The Amazing Business Person and either want to start your own business or supercharge an existing one, then the Local Enterprise Office has something for you. Whether you want to improve your online presence, become more sustainable, get into new markets, or just get the idea off the ground, they have the support for you. For more information, check out your local enterprise office on localenterprise.ie and see how they can help your business today. Now, back to the episode.
When you have an idea, you just have an idea going, well, that could be a good book. Do you like jot things down for a while, see how they sit? Or what's your process to go, this has definitely got to be a book?
The last time we spoke, I think I was maybe writing at that time the book that was Fit Mind.
You were, yeah. Fit Mind. That came out very shortly after, I think. Okay. When was that, 2021? Come out?
Yeah, early 2021, I think. Yeah. To be honest, when I started that, I was writing a book about men's mental health, and I wrote 40,000 words and then threw it in the bin because I didn't think that was what I wanted to do anymore. And then I switched to doing Fit Mind. So,
so it evolved. Did it evolve or did you start again?
Oh, it just completely changed. Yeah, I just went in the bin and scrapped it. Yeah, I'm stupid at that way. Not stupid, but that's just how I operate. Like when I left fitness, I had an email list of 30,000 people and I just scrapped that as well because, you know, I didn't bring that with me into the personal development space because I wanted to burn the ships and start again. Just in retrospect, was not the smartest move. How a book happens. I guess it's what am I most curious about that I think can help people, that I have a good knowledge of, that will also deepen and develop. So at the moment I'm writing about shadow. The book will come out next year. I have a really good understanding of shadow, which is the kind of darker aspects of our psyche, the unconscious drivers that run our lives without us knowing. So I have a good grasp of it. I have a lot of experience in it, but it's also going to be interesting for me to write about for the next 6 months. I don't want to just write about what I know now. I want to be stretched. So that's the process, I think, is like, what do I want the reader to understand and get from this book? What are the key concepts? Like if I only had a couple hours with someone to share everything I've learned on this, what would the key concepts be? And that becomes the chapters. And then in each of the chapters, what are the main points? And then I flesh it out from there. I try to teach points with some background information and then some stories and merge the two. And then the actual process, the best thing I've ever heard, which is really simple, is the writing and the editing are two different things. And it was funny, I was dating a girl when I was writing, I think it was Fit Mind, or it was probably Fit Mind. And I was saying to her, this is driving me crazy. I'm just looking at a blank page. And she had no background in writing. She was a teacher, but I don't know where it came from. But she said, well, if you've no writing, there's nothing to edit. And I was like, oh, interesting. She said, you're saying you just need to start writing. Because the mistake that I have made is you there's two parts, right? There's the writer and there's the editor in your own psyche. The writer wants to write and just let it flow. The editor is like the inner critic that comes in and says, oh, that doesn't sound great. Yeah. So at the moment, my process is I just write and write and write for hours. And then I come back to it the next day and I refine what was written. Then I come back the next day and I refine and I refine and I refine and I refine. So it's writing once and then refining 10 times.
Probably. Okay.
That's what it looks like in practicality.
Do you enjoy the process?
I am really enjoying the process this time. Yeah, I'm very much in flow at the moment. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I haven't in the past.
What's different?
What's different? It's partially that. It's not, I'm not writing to impress anyone. I'm not writing to. I'm writing what feels. I don't know. It's just flowing. I think the right subject, the right time. Mm. It's stretching me a little bit in terms of vulnerability and what I'll share. I'm having to do a bit of research just to dot my I's and cross my T's or whatever the expression is, because Jungian psychology is pretty deep work, you know, and I'm not a Jungian psychologist. What else am I enjoying about it? I'm enjoying, I'm prone to anxiety at times, and I think the anxiety is when I don't use my creative energy and I get caught in consumption.
Yeah.
I think that's true for a lot of people with anxiety, is you have this energy in you that needs to be expressed in some way or another. And so I just feel this freedom that comes from actually getting stuff out rather than always putting stuff in.
Yeah, I can relate to that. I think when I do these pods, I feel so happy. And if I combine that then with an exercise, with a workout or a run or anything physical, just bliss.
Yeah.
You know, and it's interesting to hear you say that. And I'm always curious about people's processes. And as I hear you say that, it's like you're at your the edge of your zone of comfort within your zone of genius. So you're pushing beyond that zone of genius. You're adding to that zone. Talk to me about the shadow, because this is something relatively new to me. Mm. It's only through psychotherapy work in the last probably 12 months that I've kind of learned about the shadow, did a lot of work in the inner voice back in the day. But the shadow is new to me. So for people that maybe haven't even heard of the shadow, what is it?
I suppose to frame it a little bit, obviously, personal development is a big thing over the last couple of years in particular. And you look at the bestsellers and, you know, some of the top selling books are about habits and environment and goal setting and all this kind of stuff. And a lot of that stuff has trickled down from psychology, like old school psychology becomes popular psychology. And one of the things that got forgotten about because it's not so sexy is, I think, the shadow. And basically what the shadow is the parts of ourselves that we've rejected or hidden away or denied, the parts that were shamed at some point. So common examples. For a lot of men, emotions are in the shadow because they were told as boys that boys don't cry. And so we learned early on who we needed to be loved and to be safe. And women were the same. Everyone was the same. So we come into the world. There's a poet called Robert Bly who talks about when we come into the world, we're 360 degree personalities. So you cry one moment, the next moment you're laughing. Next thing you're running around naked. Next thing your pot belly's out. Next thing you're shouting for what you want. There's no sense of filter.
When I watch my daughter, that's it. It just, when I watch her now, it's with a sense of wonder, and it's with a sense of just relearning what it is to be carefree and to be joyous and to be, again, she's crying 1 second, 2 seconds later, she's laughing her head off. Then she's like, oh, look, I'm going to play with the dog. And then she's gone again.
Yeah.
It's wonderful. It's magic.
And she's driven by her authentic expression and driven by her emotions because there's no stories there yet. And she gets a little bit older, she starts to develop stories based on her environment. So stories about what emotions are good, what emotions are bad, what's right, what's wrong.
I did this, then this happened, then that.
Yeah.
Whereas at the minute, I don't mean this in a flippant way, isn't she not thinking? I mean, she's just not overthinking.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
She's just doing.
Yeah, there's no judgment. She hasn't decided who she is. That's why I talk about who am I beyond who I think I am. Up to like two or three, we'll talk about ourselves in the third person because we don't even realize we're a separate identity. Like, oh, Pat want food, you know, Pat tired. But then it becomes I. Oh, that's mine and I. Yeah. And then there's a separation. So now you're a unique being. And when you become a unique being, you decide who you are, but you also decide who you're not. So effectively, the shadow is who we believe ourselves not to be. So if I'm hardworking, probably my shadow is my quote unquote laziness. So I've rejected one half of who I am. In reality, all traits serve a purpose, right? So every trait can be useful up to a certain degree, but we're black and white. We decide this is good, this is bad, this is right, this is wrong. The problem becomes when we hide half of who we are, it doesn't disappear. It develops energy in the background. A really simple example is when you're told that anger is wrong and you play the nice guy all the time, I'm definitely guilty of this, always people pleasing and all this kind of stuff. Your anger is suppressed and you either direct it toward yourself.
Yeah.
Or you blow up on the wrong person. Or I've had the experience of like, we talk about, I don't know, fees and stuff from clients. Okay, it's this amount. And they'll say, oh, well, will you do this extra and this extra and this extra? I really stretch you.
I know exactly where you're going. I know, and I've been there.
But the nice guys are like, yeah, of course. And then there's something that happens. And I'm just like, no. Well, like, and I don't, and they're communicating perfectly. I'm not communicating well. So that's
and then I'm furious at myself.
Yeah.
I'm pissed off at Gary for the next 3 weeks leading up to it, because I'm like, you said you'd do this and now you're raging, now you fool, you should have stuck to your guns.
Yeah.
It's weird.
So shadow, put simply, is the unconscious driver in our life, like all these unconscious patterns. We say we want one thing and we do the opposite, or we recreate the same cycles time and time again.
The same cycles time and time again is huge. You see this in people all the time, even in yourself.
Yeah.
You do the same thing. I talk about this with business people all the time. You know, they keep doing the same thing, even though the result is not opportune. It's not what they want. Mm-hmm. But just because, even though they know it's bad, instead of pushing beyond, they stay with it. So what is that, Pat? What's driving them?
Well, again, mind-body connection, your nervous system. What feels familiar to the nervous system feels safe, even if it's not the right thing. Like if abusive relationships are what I've experienced throughout my life, it's familiar, and therefore my nervous system will crave that. And so I'll keep retracting those until I become conscious. So Carl Jung had the quote that said, until you make the unconscious conscious, it will run your life and you will call it fate. So until you make the unconscious conscious, it will run your life and you will call it fate. So an example of that is, again, if I'm the nice guy and I've suppressed my anger and I never speak up for myself, I might go through life thinking, if I'm just a nice guy, eventually people are going to see my value and they're going to be nice to me. But in reality, I'll keep having the experience of people walking all over me. And it's not about going from nice guy to asshole. It might be about trying out both sides of the coin and seeing how it is. But then
where the line is. Yeah.
The line is the middle ground of finding authentic expression. Because if you're a nice guy, you're not an authentic person, because you're telling people what they want to hear. You're manipulating people in a shadowy way. You think you're being great, you know, but so shadow work, put simply, is about recognizing the traits that we rejected in ourselves or hid or suppressed. One of the ways we recognize it is looking at our patterns, looking at the things that trigger us, looking at the things we find difficult in other people is often a really good sign of our shadow. If I judge people who are cocky, maybe I've pushed my cockiness completely into shadow and I'm overly humble and I'm self-deprecating. And so that's a sign of, oh, maybe I could. So it's recognizing what we've hidden and then integrating those aspects again. So integration means I'm not going to take my anger back and just be running around the place beating everyone up in Dublin because now I'm an angry person and that's fine. But I'm going to get close to it, almost like a martial artist. You can trust a martial artist because they understand their violence and they understand their potential for causing harm. But if we just pretend, oh, I'm just a good guy, I'm just a nice guy, I'm a hardworking, kind, compassionate.
You're playing a character, you're oppressing.
That's what it is. The opposite of the shadow is the persona, which is the Latin for mask. So it's the mask that I present to the world. So I take pride in certain aspects of myself. If you look at the things you're proud of and the idealized version of yourself that you would write down on the other side of the page, if you write down the opposite of each of those things, that's a hint as to what's in your shadow. So yeah, if you don't address this stuff, it'll kind of creep up and just play out in the background. Another example might be if I grow up and there's a lot of praise given to people that are hardworking, I decide as a child, okay, it makes sense to be hardworking, so I'm going to be hardworking. And then I'm driven by my work ethic. I reject the part of me that needs rest because I call it laziness. And what's going to happen? I'm going to get burnt out. So shadow integration is to recognize that hard work is not good or bad. It's neutral. Rest is not good or bad. It's neutral. All these things are neutral. It's what we do with them that makes them good or bad. Anger is not bad. It's neutral. But this kind of polarized way of living is causes us to be on emotional roller coasters, I think.
And that's what we want. We want labels, don't we? We want to like be able to identify ourselves as, oh, I'm really this, I'm really that.
And it gives us a sense of control in a world that feels out of control, you know?
Bingo, right? That's exactly it.
I have a mentor, he's a Native American teacher over in the States, and he talks about how we experience emotions, which are sensations in the body. So you think about anxiety, it's anxiety is not in the head, it's in the body. It's like, okay, everyone's different, but I have tension in my chest, I have heat in my face, I feel all my energy kind of running upward. And then I give it a name, I say, I'm anxious. And as soon as I give it a name and a label, I go to my head and I try to figure out, why am I anxious? Who's caused this? How do I get away from this? And so what's been happening in my body has been, I've ran from my body up into my head because I feel safer up there. It feels uncomfortable with my body. But if I can just drop down and take a couple of breaths, usually it's going to settle a bit. I think what happens a lot when we're too focused on thinking and the mind, we try to outthink our depression, our sadness, our apathy, and you have to come into the body. Yeah. That's what exercise does. That's what breathwork does. That's what meditation does. That's what even therapy can do. It can externalize some of this noise. So yeah,
it's a phenomenal area. Like, and it's just we all want simple answers to complex questions. Like the world is that exact thing summed up right now in Ireland. If you look at God, you can't look at the news. You can't look at anything. Everyone wants simple answers. They want people to blame. They're wrong. They're right. Like the world is never black and white, and especially with ourselves. We assume we want this simple narrative going, oh, I'm just this way because of why. When in reality, it's just so much more complex. And it's never like, it's just the head. It's just the body. It's just, it's never just that. It's about rounding it out. How have you delved into the shadow? Like, how have you kind of like explored this?
Different ways. One is what we talked about, like recognizing the patterns. So what are the relational dynamics that I keep playing out? What are the frustrations that keep coming up for me in my interactions in the business world? What are, so looking at patterns and then figuring out, okay, what's at play here? Another way is recognizing, there's a concept of parts work, which I think is really useful.
Parts work.
Okay. Parts work is understanding that you're sat where you're sat, I'm sat where I'm sat. We might think that we're just one person sat here, but really within each of us, there's a myriad of characters that all have different motivations and different drivers and different things that they want to experience in life. So I have a perfectionist part, I have an overachieving part, I have an addict part, I have a kind and compassionate part. And we learned different ways of being in order to stay safe in the world. So we all have painful experiences when we're young. So imagine being bullied when you're young, that's overwhelming. And so your psyche is genius. It comes up with ways and strategies of not experiencing that again. So maybe I become a bully, and that's my way of staying safe. Or maybe I become an achiever, and that's my way of staying safe. Or maybe I become reclusive, and that's my way of staying safe. So we develop these parts, these characters. And we have many different parts. And depending on how safe or how threatened we feel in the world, different parts will kind of take the lead, I suppose. So that's been a way for me to recognize, okay, when I feel stressed, what's the part that takes over? The overachiever that wants validation. Okay, so that's a sign. So that's part of my shadow playing out. What's really going on there is there's a part of me that feels insecure. So that's another way I work with shadow. The other way is through breath work. So breath work is a means of breathing really deeply into the body, quietening your mind, and then noticing what's beyond that. Might be a conversation for a different day, but with conscious connected breath work, which is what I lead, when we do this specific way of breathing, it switches off the monkey mind. So you experience something called transient hypofrontality. So your kind of default mode network. This is a lot of psychedelic research around this as well. The kind of the default mode that tells me who I am and how I fit into the world starts to quieten, and I tap more into limbic brain, which is the emotional brain. And sometimes memories come up, sometimes suppressed emotions come up, sometimes things that I have. That's another way of working with shadow. You start to see, oh, wait, there's been a story there in the background that I wasn't even aware of that's been running my life. So, yeah. It's all going to be much simpler when my book comes out. People will have a 10-step process.
And you'll have discount code FOX10 for Pat's new book when it comes out 2025.
You know what the challenging thing with shadow work is, and challenging with any of this work, is it's not linear, you know?
Yeah.
And it's nice to have linear means of progress. Okay, I'll do this and this and this, and then I'm going to get this
result. We all think linear. Like, yeah. We know, again, that's why I was so interested in this conversation with you, because sometimes it's nice just to have these conversations where you can just go anywhere, because, you know, sometimes conversations have to be linear, and then what happened, and then what happened, and then what happened. Whereas I was excited to have this one with you, because just to explore and let our curiosity go, because we all plan in a linear fashion. We all think we live in a linear fashion, when in reality, none of that is true. You have to have plans, of course. If you don't have a plan, you never know when to get there. But life's messy.
Yeah.
Day to day is messy. You know, things happen that just throw you off kilter. It's all about like how you have that self-awareness to know, okay, this is fine because we've got this, this, and this. And building, we talked about earlier, but building the foundations. What does a week look like in the life of Pat? Because I'm curious to bring it back more to the practical now as you round out the conversation, because I like to go major, minor. I like to dip into the major, and then I like to come back into the minor and go, someone listening to this is like, a lot of what Pat's saying is hitting home for me here. Again, it's not linear. We can't prescribe people to do certain things. That's why I ask you about your own life. What does a week look like in your life to kind of work on all the things we talked about there?
At the moment, a big shift in energy for me the last couple of weeks, and last more than a couple of weeks, has been refining a little bit. So saying, okay, the shadow book and the breathwork that I've mentioned, those are my two key projects. That's just having key projects again has really narrowed my focus and really, so I'll probably do 2-3 hour work blocks in the day, like a focus work where internet's off, all distractions are off, and I'll spend 3 hours on the book. And then I'll spend 3 hours on the breath work. That's the work day, probably. Then there's all the needed, the smaller things, checking emails. And there's, I don't like social media so much anymore. I don't do too much of that. But I'd say 2 6-hour or 2 3-hour work blocks in the day works well for me. I train jiu-jitsu most days. Brazilian jiu-jitsu is a big passion. It gives me a social outlet. It gives me a physical outlet. I do breath work quite a bit and embodiment practices. So different practices for being with discomfort. Because your nervous, I talk a lot about the nervous system, but your nervous system is like anything else. It needs to be trained. And so I'll do exercises to put myself in physically uncomfortable positions and to stay with my breath. And that's training me, in essence, to be with discomfort in life so that when I have to have a difficult conversation, I know what that tension feels like.
Okay.
And I can stay with it. But those are the main things. I try to get out in nature. I try to be with, you know, people that I care about and have an exercise that people might find useful, which can be a little bit illuminating and kind of... confronting is, I had my men's group do this a couple of months ago and it shook a few of the guys, is to write down your needs. So what are your needs in life? So we all have like fundamental needs. I need food, I need connection, I need safety, I need a roof above my head. But then I think as individuals, we all have needs that kind of life works well. Like you mentioned, when you do a podcast, you feel quite blissful, or when you go to the gym. So maybe those are some of your needs. For me, I have needs like I need to find purpose through my work. I need a creative outlet. I need conversations with people who I connect with who make me feel like I'm not crazy, because a lot of the world makes me feel like I'm crazy. So I have these kind of fundamental needs. And a lot of my week is just about figuring out, did I tick those boxes? And if not, how can I tick them? So again, meaningful work, connections with people that, you know, I care about, jiu-jitsu and movement. And there's not a lot really outside of that. I'm not like overly structured anymore. I did all that for a couple of years, but I pick a few things that are important to me in life, and I try to make tangible progress in each of those every day.
Talk to me briefly, because it's an area I'm kind of exploring myself, and this area I'm trying to work on is focus. I think focus is going to become a superpower, because people are just so distracted. And by people, I mean myself as well. Like so distracted by social media and our phones, the two things that are drawing us into this world. Yeah. How do you think about this? How do you work on improving that?
As we kind of talked about earlier, like sometimes I'm great at giving advice in terms of, oh, you know, niche and stuff. And if I've said to lots of people recently, if you're going to niche in one thing, niche and focus, like, because I think that is the superpower of the future for sure. I think it's the biggest thing. The question I sometimes ask myself when I find myself distracted is, what am I trying to avoid here? So if I am scrolling my phone when I'm supposed to be writing my book, I'll ponder that, like, what am I trying to avoid? Oh, there's an uncomfortable bit in the book that I feel stuck on, or it feels vulnerable to write that story. So I get honest with myself about the feeling that I'm trying to avoid in the distraction. That's one thing. And then just really having a clear, like, if you don't, it's this is all very old cliche personal development stuff, but that idea of if you don't have a plan for your own life, you become a part of someone else's plan. So I think there's a bit of that if I get up in the morning and there's no sense of what I need to get done in the day, I just fall into distraction. If you don't fill your day with high priority tasks, it will inherently get filled with low priority tasks that don't matter. So, you know, that's simple for me. Like today, I we're doing this podcast, you know, I'm going to train jiu-jitsu tonight. I'm going to get 1500 words of my book written, and I'm going to spend 3 hours on the upcoming breathwork training. Those are kind of my big rocks. So I think it's as simple as that might sound. It's kind of having your priorities written down.
Do you physically write them down?
Yeah. Yeah. There's something different in physically writing versus typing. I think it engages the brain in a different way.
I think so. There's something weird. I was thinking about this yesterday. I was just making some notes for the week ahead, and it feels more real. It feels more like you're actually doing it. I find sometimes you can type and type and type and type, and then you close the laptop and it's like they've just vanished.
Yeah. And I think it slows us down to like a realistic speed of living. Like there's got to be detrimental effects to the speed of information that we're accumulating, you know, and taking on. Don't they say like within the first hour of the day we've taken on more information than back in the day they would have taken on probably in a year?
100%. And I think about this a lot, because like the acceleration in information, the acceleration of how much people are consuming, our brains are not wired to not only just take it in, but to process it and to actually do something with it.
Yeah.
We're just bombarded by information. That's why I'm always really interested to kind of dig into high performers and go just the specifics of how they perform. Because again, as you get a bit older, you realize all the cliches are true.
Yeah. Right?
You know, you get rid of all the hacks, you get rid of all the tricks and the gimmicks, and you start to focus back on the essentials, the fundamentals, the cores, the things that actually move stuff through the pipe. What are you most excited about?
I just feel myself coming into a really good place again. Like I have my ups and downs and I have my challenging times and I have my dark nights of the soul and all that. Obviously, like I envy some people that can just, you know, they find their path and they just keep going. And again, I have this curiosity that keeps bringing me new places. And that's exciting and inspiring and looks adventurous, but it's also scary and destabilizing and doesn't feel, it's difficult at times, like not having that certainty and not being able to cling to that. This is who I am and this is where I am and this is where I'm going. So I'm excited about coming into a really good space. The last couple of weeks in particular, I just feel most in flow I've felt in a long time. So that I'm excited about that. I'm excited about this book coming out. I feel like I'm really going to take something that hasn't reached the mainstream yet and put it across in an accessible way. So I take pride in that, like kind of going through fringes and finding stuff and bringing it back to my tribe. I'm excited about this breathwork teacher training I've got coming up. I've got such a great group of people. I'm excited about going to Egypt in a few weeks to pre-dive for a few weeks. I'm excited about some of the corporate jobs. Everything's exciting at the moment. I'm kind of grateful. I feel aligned. I feel
you seem very happy and you seem in flow. As I'm chatting to you, you just seem like a person that's flowing, and I can resonate with so much of what you're saying there. Like, it's a blessing and a curse to have all these kind of like interests and things. I had a wobble recently where I was like, why am I doing this? Why am I doing this? And like at the minute, I just know because it's bringing me somewhere. Don't know where. Honestly, couldn't tell you. Like, honestly, you know, when you asked me earlier, where do you have any in 2 years? I honestly don't know. I'm going to be somewhere good though. I just feel that in my soul, in my heart, wherever you feel things, I just feel that there's something there. I'm doing what I should be doing. I don't know where that's going though. And I do feel envious. I have the exact same. We're on a very similar trajectory. I sometimes look at people and go, damn. Sports stars usually. I look at sports stars and you go, class. They just know they need to turn up every day, put in the work. And that's probably one of the most precarious positions you can ever be in, because they got to do, like, it's on a knife edge. Like, nothing's certain for them, but I just know to turn up on the train. I always think of myself, I'm like, I'd love to have like a training headquarters. Let's go to every day. like I just turn up. Oh, morning, Gary. Okay, you have to have breakfast from 8 to 10. Then you're going to do this. Then you're going to, like, almost like a school where you just turn up and you're like, this is what you need to do today to get it done. That's why I'm kind of picking out at the minute with people I admire, trying to pick out their focus tools, because I'm trying to figure out, right, how should I work, because it's, the world is fundamentally changing, and we're lucky to be able to sit here on a Tuesday afternoon and record a podcast, and this is our job. But it does not come without its challenges.
The biggest thing I try to remind myself of, again, I've got a couple of philosophies I think I've shared on this. Like, one is I get better at the things that I practice, so I just need to choose what I want to be good at. Like, if I'm good at stress, it's because I practice it a lot. If I'm good at calm, it's because I practice. The other is that life has given me material to work with all the time. It might not be what I want, but and the other one that gives me relief at times is just committing to myself to enjoying the chapter that I'm in. So there's times where I'm like, oh, I'm not where I'm supposed to be, and I'm not young as I was once, and I'm not as old as and it's just like, can I enjoy this chapter with everything that's in it? The ups, the downs, the struggles, the magic, the everything. Because it's so easy to put ourselves into the future of the past and think things will be better and have that nostalgia. Oh, things were great when I was 20 and I was carefree, or it's going to be great when I retire. And it's like, no, you're in, just like, love where you are now as best you can and accept it. And I think happiness comes down to accepting what's there and not having expectations about it having to be different.
Well, expectation is the biggest killer of joy, right? You know, expectation, envy is the biggest killer of joy, but expectation as well, in terms of looking at other people and just expecting that you should have what they have. And, you know, if I had what Pat has, I'd be happy. Whereas in reality, it's like the thing, you know, if everyone threw their problems out on the table, you'd take back your own in a heartbeat. That's true. I'm going to give you a version of our quickfire round.
Oh, cool.
What book would you recommend everyone should read? Now, you're a big reader, so you can give us a couple of different, because I know you have a broad scope, so you can give us a couple of different ones if you like.
Oh God, it's a difficult question.
It is. People ask me, like, I'm the biggest book nerd ever. People ask me, like, oh gosh, what problem are you trying to solve? And I go all deep with them, going, well, what's this and what's that? What books do you...
Oh, Shantaram. You know, Shantaram.
Read Shantaram? Yeah, yeah, yeah. Read it. Good.
Marching Powder. These are not...
these are not your self-help books. This is not Shoe Dog. Shantaram and Marching Powder. I love non-fiction that reads like fiction. That's my favorite genre.
Yeah, yeah. I'm trying to think.
Some of the stories.
What have I been reading recently? Oh, so one of my mentors is a guy called Robert Masters.
Robert Masters.
He wouldn't be that well known this side of the world probably, but I've done a lot of training with Robert. He's got 13 books, but he's got a book called, it's a shadow work book I really like. I've forgotten what it's called now, but and he's got another book called Spiritual Bypassing, which I like. So Robert Masters, anything by him I really like. Yeah, I'm drawing a blank.
Nice. Outside of well, Shantaram and Marching Powder, two excellent recommendations. What do you believe other people would find strange or strongly disagree with?
That I believe that I think other people would strongly disagree with. Say that question to me again.
What do you believe that other people would find strange or strongly disagree with? So what's your contrarian opinion?
Okay. I believe this, that is on some level, there's powers that be are messing with us. And I think there's elites. I believe some of that stuff that...
the Illuminati.
Yeah. I don't know about Illuminati, but I don't know if people will find that strange, but I think the higher ups don't want us to be happy and healthy. That would be my... I won't go too much further into that, but I... Is that a bit cryptic?
That's a little, but I get it. It's fine. That's absolutely fine. What would you do today if I give you €10 million?
I'd probably write my 1500 words of my book and do my breathwork training and go to jiu-jitsu.
You make me sick. Stop and happy with what you have.
Yeah.
That's a good answer. Me and my wife talk about this all the time. Millionaire mornings. We're like, what would you do if you had €1 million? We try to recreate those mornings now, and often it isn't about money. It's about time.
Yeah.
It's about time together. I'm deep on the whole fatherhood, parenthood thing at the minute, and like trying to consume as much on that as I can. And to be honest, I'm trying to improve myself first, because I believe you kind of should be the role model. You can't just tell kids what to be. You should live it yourself. But it was a quote. It was just a simple quote. And kids want your presence, not your presence.
Yeah.
So they want you to be there, not just to hand them a toy at the end of the year because you haven't been there because you've been working or selfishly pursuing your own passions. I think people selfishly throw themselves into external things as a way of kind of avoiding the uncomfortable, avoiding the hard choice of being there, putting the time in. God, I'm not asking myself to be an interviewer. What is your kind of final piece of advice to anyone listening? This is quite broad, so I suppose what's for anyone looking to kind of make one small change, what would be your advice?
Yeah, appreciate the chapter you're in as best you can. And bring a sense of curiosity to what is life asking of you. So oftentimes we ask things of life. I want life to give me this, that, and the other. But life is bringing us a lot all the time. And it's kind of like, well, what is life asking of me? Like, is it to step into a new role? Is it to, be a more positive contributor in my community? Is it to, I don't know. I think that's an interesting one to play with, is rather than like think of all that life gives us and then, I still expect more. Like, I want more. It's like, what can I bring to this? What is it asking of me? Is it asking for more compassion? Is it asking for more patience? Is it asking for more? There's a lot of craziness in the world at the moment, and a lot of that comes down to this might be a weird example, but if you go to Dublin airport and you're stressed because you're late for your flight and you push past a few people, it's like a viral effect where they start to get stressed, and then the next person's stressed, and it's like one dysregulated person dysregulates others, and it just becomes it's the hurt people kind of idea. And that's what we're dealing with in the world now, is like so many people are disconnected from their feelings that they're numb to the pain that they're causing. And I don't know, with like everything going on in Gaza, I was a bit numb October and November, and then I had all this grief come up out of nowhere, and I like, cried for a week, and I just felt completely lost and powerless as to like what's going on, where have we gone so wrong? And, but the bit that I sat with in myself was like, a lot of this is driven by greed. And I was asking myself, where am I being greedy? Because again, that's shadow. Like what I see that's wrong with the world is happening within me.
I got you, yeah.
So by addressing my own greed, that's a bit of a tangent, but maybe it's...
No, it's a worthwhile one to consume or to sit on, because the world is very overwhelming. There's so much going on. I was literally in the gym last week, and I hate TVs in the gym, but they always have Sky News on, which is the most depressing thing in the world to have on in the gym. Just put on the football or something. Sky News. I was just this rolling loop. But I was on the rower. I was training for High Rocks. I was on the rower. So stuck on the rower. It was just this endless loop of Gaza, Ukraine, US elections, UK, protests in Ireland. You're kind of going, it's all linked and it's all tied in to the same thing of fear and anger. But it got me kind of thinking along the train, same train of thoughts, because if you started to think on that all day, you just sit there and be miserable and depressed. But when you bring it back to yourself, I think it's an incredibly worthwhile exercise to go, well, what am I going to do about that?
Back to my conspiracy, but when I talk about the higher's up and you know, what I'm talking about is when you see on Sky News and they're in Parliament or whatever, and they're like, to me, it's like a pantomime. It's like there's people like really struggling in the world right now, whether it's poverty or it's addiction or there's so many issues going on. You've got these people taking the mic, shouting at each other across this Parliament, and that's where I'm a bit like, this is so disconnected and wrong. But anyway,
I think the biggest thing is Hanlon's razor. I always use this whenever I see the stuff going on. Hanlon's razor: never attribute to stupidity, never attribute to malice what you can put down to stupidity. I think when you kind of go, and I think it's terrifying for people to go, no one's in charge. That's even more worrying, because people are like, oh wow, this is all just happening. But there definitely is an undercurrent of, at some level, there is things being done that shouldn't possibly be happening.
I know we're going in circles here, but I will finish with this. This is a...
Bring us up on a high. bring us home on a high.
Well, you asked about the final bit of advice. This is a reminder to myself. Anything I say is a reminder to myself. But it's very easy to look to other people and think that they have the solutions or have the answers or have the right way of living or whatever it might be. And I think the more fearful we are, we saw this a couple of years ago with everything that was happening, the more fearful we are, the more we cling to like somebody to give us the answers. And you know, we see it in America with the politicians and stuff, where there's just craziness, and the anxiety that it provokes in people leads them to wanting someone to father them or mother them, and so they project that onto these political figures. Nobody knows what's going on in all of this, and so you have to find your own sovereignty, and you have to find your own truth, and you have to believe in yourself, and you know, breathe a bit deeper. I think that might be the final bit of advice, is nobody knows the answers to your stuff more than you do yourself. You just need to quieten down a little bit and allow yourself to listen, rather than be bombarded with noise all the time.
I heard a great quote recently: people want certainty more than accuracy. And it's very true. People want them to tell them that that's the thing. Whereas in reality, it's exactly what you say. It's the self-empowerment. The minute you take a decision on anything, when you procrastinate, and speak again, speaking like yourself, I'm speaking to myself here, when you procrastinate on something, it gets bigger and bigger and bigger. But the minute you just take the decision and physically move towards the action, it's like the air going out of a balloon. Just the problem just shrinks. Pat, that was a fantastic chat, enlightening. Where can people learn more about yourself and what you're working on?
Thank you. I appreciate you engaging me with this.
This is what I'm trying to move towards, is go deeper. You know, I love, and I do that through the medium of business, but I think there's a new breed of entrepreneur coming through, I hope. And when I use the word entrepreneur broadly, I mean, it's people who are building things and trying to shape a better future. And you're definitely at the core of that.
Thank you.
Where can people learn more about you?
PatDivoli.com is the website, and I'm being an adult now, so I'm on LinkedIn. Pat Divoli.
Welcome. I love it.
And look out for that book next year. So that's me.
Perfect. Pat, thank you so much.
Legend. Thank you.